I'm Mark Purcell, and this is Cincinnati Edition. Time to go on the money with Chris DeSimio.
Well, an interesting week on Wall Street last week. Markets charged ahead to record highs. Earnings parade started. Yesterday, we got a peek at bank earnings, which generally came in better than expected, though the revenues were a little lighter. Markets responding to, of all things, a trade deficit being run by China. That's among the many things to which we were treated. Of course, one of the wonderful resources available to investors is the internet, and a lot of the content on the internet gives you a time to kind of pick and choose what you like. So many times, if you see your favorite financial network, perhaps one with the initial CNBC, you might see a story and then want to drill down a little bit on the internet. And one of the most well-known practitioners on CNBC and who writes frequently on the website is Jeff Cox, who has written many, many books and been here on this show numerous times. And Jeff's postings very, very useful, especially over the last couple of weeks. Has some interesting things to say. And Jeff, thanks for taking part of your weekend to be with us.
Oh, good morning,
Jeff. You know, if as you go to the website, the CNBC.com website, and there'll be a link to the website here from WVXU, you mention a couple of many items about how the market here in the United States has had a big rally, and yet this cloud of worry, of anxiety, just hangs over it. One of your columns, worried about the U.S., hey, it beats other places. You point out the disparity in the year-to-date performance of American markets versus foreign markets. U.S. large blend funds, on example, are up nearly 12% year to date, but foreign large blend funds are up just less than 6%. What accounts, in your opinion, for that giant chasm in the performance department?
Well, I really think that, you know, this has come down to just the market that's been driven so much by central bank policy. The amount of liquidity that's being pumped into the markets now, we're printing $85 billion a month now that we're using to buy treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. It's helping to just kind of create this environment where the money's basically free, and it's inspiring a lot of risk. So, there's really not a lot of appetite anymore for, treasuries that are yielding so low. Even junk bonds have dropped down so much. So pretty much when you look at it, there have been different metaphors that are used to describe it. But, the best house in a bad neighborhood or the cleanest dirty shirt, I think that's really what it comes down to, that general time of turmoil for the global economies and the global markets. But when you kind of look at the issues that Europe is running into, even the slowdown in areas of Asia, the emerging markets have slowed down quite a bit. And they sort of look at the U.S. and they say, well, if nothing else, it's got a central bank that's willing to pretty much take historic measures to keep the markets going. So I think that it's just almost, the money's going to go, it's going to follow the path of least resistance. And I think that that's what you're seeing as far as American markets go now.
In one of your other columns posted on the website, you talk about the Bank of Japan seeming to want to move into the Fed's neighborhood, a different house, but in the same neighborhood. What will be the likely effect of the Bank of Japan following in the Fed's footsteps in the asset buying department?
Well, I mean, they're there. They're already there. Prime Minister Abe has made it clear that they want to do whatever they can to stoke inflation, the good kind of inflation, that after battling basically two decades of deflation, no growth. They kind of set the tone back in the 90s as far as quantitative easing went, but which is the term that we use for this money printing that the Fed does. But they did it on kind of a smaller scale, and it never really took root. Their economy's in a lot of ways very similar to ours, but, a regressive tax structure, very high corporate taxes, and they were kind of never able to achieve any type of escape velocity with their economy. Since Mr. Abe has come to power, he's indicated that they are interested in doing whatever they need to do. And really, in terms of a percentage of the economy, what they're doing is even more drastic than what the United States is doing. So they sort of just saying, they want to get in on the party. And they have the ability to do that. They're not currency constrained like the Eurozone is. So they can just kind of go ahead and do what they want to do. It will be interesting to see whether it has the same effect on the economy that it's having on their equity markets, because, I mean, Japanese stocks since about mid-November have just pretty much gone parabolic, and, you know, they continue to perform very well. And, you know, we've seen the same thing happen as far as U.S. stocks go, pretty much, after the central bank, Ben Bernanke, indicated that we're going to see these easing programs indefinitely now. You know, previously there had been time constraints put on them, where now we're just pretty much into, you know, QE forever. The U.S. markets have reacted very strongly as well.
You kind of touched on the performance of the Japanese stock market. The average Japanese equity fund is up about 19% year to date. Compared to 5-year returns, an average U.S. large blend fund's up just under 5%. Average Japanese funds, and the average rate of return, which factors in the 19% they're up this year, and even more if you go back to November. But the average Japanese fund is down about 1.5% per year over the last 5 years. Is it too late for American investors to start nibbling at some of these Japanese stocks?
I don't think so. Certainly, when you look at a market that's been as aggressive as that, you want to say, geez, I don't want to buy at the top here. But I just do think that there's still room left in this easing trade, this money printing trade. As I'm sure if you've been following my writings, I mean, it's not something that I say with a lot of glee. It's just I really feel that we're setting the table for something really for not a real great outcome in the future. But as of right now, it's, you know, do you throw yourself in front of the freight train? Or, you know,
sure.
And that's kind of what the equity markets are. So I think, just to answer your question real briefly, I do feel as though, you know, 2013 will probably be a pretty good year for risk assets. So if you wanted to wait for a dip on Japanese equities, yeah, that's probably the safest thing to do, you know, to look for, you know, at some point there's an inevitable dip that will come in there and get you a little better price point. But I think, you know, in the big picture, in the long haul, that, you know, central bank activity is going to continue to dominate the markets this year.
Yeah. You recommended that for people who in the United States are looking for a pullback, an opportunity to kind of dip in or deploy some fresh assets, if you want to kind of be in Europe but don't want to take the risk of all those peripheral countries, you single out one country in particular as a place to invest. Why Germany?
I think Germany, that's just sort of the play when you look at, from a valuation play. They have really, you know, the German markets have done very well this year. They've underperformed for sure. I think the DAX is up not even 2% this year. So I think, you know, you want to go to the places. You kind of want to follow that same theme of America versus the rest of the world. You want to look at sort of Germany versus the rest of the world, and the equity markets there have been slow because of a lot of the you know, the headline risk there. But I think when you look at Germany and you you think about, you know, the most stable economy over there, again, you know, the best of a bad lot, but the most stable, and, you know, they've kind of been injured with the rest of the continent, that if you're really looking for some type of growth area, I think Germany is probably going to be your best bet this year.
You know, while kind of perusing your writings at the website, there's a new word, and I realize it's early in the morning, but there was a word that I started to kind of pick up, which I'd never heard before. And if you've been working hard all week, that this is a word that you may have come across but didn't know what it means. You wrote about something called a Bitcoin. And for the uninitiated, just what is a Bitcoin? And why are Mark Zuckerberg's enemies, the dreaded Winklevoss twins, now amassing a huge position in this thing?
Well, here's what the Bitcoin is. Bitcoin's been around for a couple of years, but, you know, every once in a while, you know, somebody is out there writing about it. But it didn't really come into any type of mainstream play until just a few weeks ago. But a Bitcoin is it's a digital coin. It's something that's created online within an online network, and it's being touted as a currency, as an alternative currency to some of the the depreciated currencies that we have in the world today. And, you know, it really kind of came to light after the crisis in Cyprus when they decided to go in and basically confiscate investor deposits to help bail out the banks there. So what has happened with Bitcoins is that you can go online, you can buy and sell these things. The prices have just absolutely gone parabolic. I mean, you know, literally have increased, you know, within, you know, by multiples just in the period of a couple of weeks. I mean, we'd hit actually a high of $260 per Bitcoin where it had been trading, you know, less than $20 not all that long ago. So this has really kind of taken on a life of its own. A lot of the mainstream media outlets have followed up some of my reporting on this and actually, you know, now it's in the New York Times, so I guess you kind of know that Bitcoin has made the big time. But as the week drew to a close, we kind of started to see a lot of volatility in it. The biggest exchange, something called Mt. Gox, MTGOX.
You can't make this stuff up
online. Yeah, you just can't. But you know, this is the point that I've been making. You know, I've been getting a lot of, you know, kind of furry eyebrows from people in the newsroom about why are you paying so much attention to this? But to me, it's not about the Bitcoin. It reflects the level of unease out there. It's an amazing story. Yeah. It really is.
Well, there'll be more information from the WVXU website linking to your writings. And Jeff Cox from CNBC, I want to thank you so much for taking part of your weekend to be with us.
Great being here. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Great. And for Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimio on The Money.